welcome to another On Well Being podcast. I'm really pleased to introduce Dr. Lisa Gatenby. She is a registered nutritionist who previously has worked as an academic in nutrition, and she has an organization, a company called Healthwise Nutrition. She works with a whole range of different clients, and I have got Lisa into the studio today because something I see again and again is stress and anxiety around what to eat for tea. And it's a real thing. I know that sounded a little bit comical, but it's that we, many of us who show some interest in health, perhaps want to be healthier, feel like we're always eating the wrong thing because every time we turn around, there's a different message around food. And as Lisa and I have said in the past, it's not like we have to eat, so we have to make these choices. And actually, you know, for people, and as we know, again, so many people are struggling with mood and low mood and anxiety. This is another layer of worry. So Lisa, who I've worked with many times in the past, is very good at cutting to the chase and explaining it like it is. So welcome, Lisa. And is that something that you see as well?
Thank you. Yes, I'm really excited to be here. Definitely. So the amount of people who have a knowledge of nutrition and food and healthy eating that then say to me that they have just given up because there's so much information out there, they're confused. I remember a telephone call not that long ago where a lady said to me she was so confused by all the information she'd seen, and she was quite knowledgeable about food and nutrition, but she'd given up and she was just eating toast and butter because she didn't know what to cook.
It's not funny, but I'm laughing, yeah. Because and this is why I wanted to talk. This, I know On Wellbeing is mental health, but I see time and time again people are struggling with their mental health, and part of it's around diet. Mm-hmm. And this lady is a fantastic example that, yep, she just thought, well, I'm just going to eat toast. And how many of us just end up, well, I'll just eat the same thing. And that's, I mean, we'll talk about gut health in a bit, but one of the worst things is to continually eat the same thing. But we do, because we're like, well, I don't know, yep, what to eat. And do you have any other examples of people that are feeling the same as that lady?
Loads of examples. Yeah, loads of people have said similar things to me. And or people who come along and say, I don't know whether I should be doing keto or whether too much protein's bad for me and whether I should be doing paleo and avoiding meat completely. Should I be going vegan? And people are just so confused.
It's become the new religion. People, you know, everywhere you look on social media, it's as you say, becoming vegan, or it's, you know, this kind of protein fixation, and protein's added to everything every time we look in the supermarket. Mm-hmm. And so we buy it because we think that's good. And then there's just, it's so confusing. And what, yeah, and then the social media as well. I mean, how, yep, that's not helped, has it?
No, I think the thing with social media is there's so many confusing messages out there, and not all of them are true. So people might see something on social media and then start avoiding certain foods, or they get things advertised to them. So one of my bugbears at the moment is people getting intolerance tests. And, you know, these are marketed to people on their social media feeds. Mm-hmm. And so then they send off a hair sample or a nail sample, or maybe do a spot of blood test, and get told they're intolerant to a wide range of things that actually they're not at all intolerant to.
And then there's more anxiety because they've, yep, now got a complicated diet where they have to avoid tomatoes, yep, peas, cheese, you know,
yes,
and then it, you know, their life becomes more complicated.
So then I get telephone calls saying, I just don't know what to eat, because, you know, we've got one side of it where people are confused, there's so many health messages. Then we've got people who might think they're intolerant to things, and they may well be, but those tests are not helpful. And then they're trying to take things out of the diet without support that they maybe don't need to take out their diet, and even more stress.
So we've got probably a wide group of people listening right now who are in a similar situation, who have got, you know, should they be avoiding carbohydrates? Should they be avoiding fat, eating more fat, becoming vegan? What, looking out for food with protein added to it, drinking more water, not drinking juice, drinking, you know, and it's just, Where do we begin? There's this overload of food information. It's become the kind of new religion. Which, where do you hang your hat? Which one do you believe in? It's become almost political. And if anything, I was talking to somebody the other day, we almost are less healthy as a result because we're anxious about it and perhaps we don't even bother. So what shall we do? How do we start to tackle this craziness?
Yeah, it's not an easy thing to tackle because we're not going to get away from all those confusing messages because social media is so big. We're going to always see that information. It sells newspapers and headlines, and so there's always something cropping up that we should or shouldn't be doing. But I think, the general message should be that it doesn't need to be complicated. We can have a healthy, balanced diet very easily. We don't want to overcomplicate it. We want to just have, you know, a nice balance of food on our plate. And obviously the government has the Eat Well Guide, which is a nice visual representation of what our diet should be made up of, showing that we should have lots of fruits and vegetables, whole grain carbohydrates, protein foods, small amount of fats and our dairy foods. And that sounds maybe a bit complicated, but if we think about that in the context of a meal, well, maybe I'll have some chicken with some mashed potatoes and some green leafy vegetables, and that's a nice balanced meal, and that's not too complicated.
Okay, and that makes sense. So we're almost just going back to where we were when we grew up, yeah, if you like, with home-cooked meals. But what about the army? I don't want to put it like that because beliefs are beliefs, and about people who are fixated on, for example, specific diets. Can we, without inflaming too much, feedback from our listeners, can we just talk from a scientific perspective about some of the diets that are suggested today that people might have heard about and are interested in trying, perhaps? So, removing carbohydrates, that's something that's very popular in exercise, certain exercise sort of regimes and other individuals who want to lose weight. Talk to us briefly about that.
Okay, so if we take carbohydrates out of our diet, not only what happens is we reduce our calories because we've taken a whole group of foods out, but within those groups of foods we're also taking out cakes, biscuits, and those foods that are, you know, we know are not good for us and we shouldn't eat. Now the downside, I would say, from a balanced view, is we've also taken out whole grain carbohydrates, which have a really good fibre content and are good for our health in the long term. But yeah, in a general speaking term, we might lose weight if we take carbohydrates out of our diet because we've taken out a whole group of foods, we've reduced what we can eat. But what can happen as well, and the research tends to show, is that we might lose weight initially, but then we either plateau or we might gain weight again because we overeat the other foods that we're allowed.
We overeat the other foods because we're in that mentality of we are, you know, almost making up for it, yeah, aren't we? And I mean, we may not talk about the 5-2 diet, but there's the same concept of we save it up. Also, you know, B vitamins, energy, brain function.
Yeah.
What happens when we cut out carbohydrate for those functions?
Well, for some people, they would say that they feel brilliant when they cut out carbohydrates, and you know, that is absolutely fine. But for the majority of people that I've worked with who have tried it, they've seen this initial weight loss that then they can't sustain, and they can't sustain being off carbohydrates completely. And then what also often happens is you do have a drop in energy because the brain's preferred source of energy, or only source of energy, is glucose. And so if we're not getting any carbohydrates to break it down into glucose, the brain has to switch to another form. So it switches to using ketones, and it can do that. But whether that is the best way for it to work, the research, you know, it can work that way. But I would say that it's not going to be working at its optimum. And when, like you say, we're missing out in other vital nutrients like fibre and B vitamins.
Yeah. And let's listen, we're only talking right now about what it would have on the body. when you take carbohydrates of your diet from a cultural perspective and an enjoyment and a social perspective, there's huge losses there. We mustn't make food just about that, because food is more than that in our lives, and so it should be, right?
Yes, yeah. I mean, food is such an important part of everybody's lives, and we should enjoy it. My background is as a chef initially, and so I love food and I love people enjoying their meals, and that is what it should be. So we're not just eating we are doing that as a family and as a group.
It's not a science experiment.
No, exactly.
So we've talked about people removing carbohydrates, okay, and then added protein. There's protein added to all foods. Should we be purchasing foods with more protein in it?
Protein's got a real interest now, hasn't it? You're right. Mm-hmm. It is added to everything. Even Weetabix you can get with added protein now. But what I would say is we need protein at each meal. So it's important. We can only absorb so much protein in one go. So it's important that it's spread nicely across the day. But saying that, our protein is in things that we eat. So if we add milk to a breakfast cereal, we've added a source of protein. Or if we have yogurt, or, you know, porridge would make a great start to the day, you add milk to that. For lunch, say you have some beans or lentils or chicken or fish, they're all sources of protein. So it is not difficult to get the amount of protein we need in a day. And what happens when we have an excess of protein is the same as when we have an excess of any of our macronutrients. The body converts it and it stores it as fat. So we don't need to have
protein
extra
shakes.
Protein, such as protein shakes, because they are just then converted and stored in our fat stores because we're not burning those extra calories.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I think a lot of the hype in social media suggests we can't get protein. But, I mean, there's protein in broccoli, isn't there? There's literally protein in everything.
There's a small amount of protein in many things. Our best sources are meat, fish, eggs, beans, lentils, pulses, nuts, seeds, milk, dairy. So it's in lots and lots of things. So whatever diet we're following, we're going to be able to get enough protein in the day. We just need to make sure that it's spread throughout the day. If somebody is going to the gym and doing a workout, they don't need to take extra protein with them. They will have a meal before they go, or when they've finished. You know, at some point they're going to be having a meal, and as long as that meal contains protein, their body can absorb that and use it for what it needs to use it for.
Okay, so I mean, that's helping us to understand the, I mean, you know, and I think the hype around protein right now. And I think if there's one thing I do remember about some research I looked at, it's around food. It's, you know, if we look across the last 200 years, it's like this insane roller coaster of trends coming and going around food, fat, you know, splitting your carbohydrates and protein apart. You know, fat's bad, no, fat's good, protein don't have much, no, do have more. And this will go on for centuries to come too, won't it?
Yeah.
So we just have to step back a little bit to make sense of it. I think that's what we're trying to say. We'll talk some more in a minute about what on earth we should be eating. And you've already mentioned a sort of basic dinner. But another thing that I feel people have talked to me about that they feel a little bit of stress or anxiety perhaps they should be doing is intermittent fasting. But I think if you're already in low mood, that can't be good for you. tell me what you think about that.
I'm really glad you've asked this question, actually, because I get asked it a lot at the moment. It's really popular. So when we think about fasting and intermittent fasting, now, what we should all be doing as a population is not eating overnight. And what happens now is that people eat very late into the evening, or they carry on eating after their evening meal late into the evening, and they're not getting what we'd class as an overnight fast. Whereas years ago, which is natural, yes. So years ago, people would have had their evening meal and then they wouldn't have eaten
again. Kitchen closed, as my grandma would say.
Yeah,
so kitchen is closed.
In our grandma's days, there wasn't a mass excess of food like we have nowadays, and so many different products around. So they would have had their evening meal and they wouldn't have eaten again till breakfast. And that is how our bodies should work. So there's this term, which is the intermittent fasting term, and it's sounds really sexy and interesting, but actually what it just means is, let's be sensible, we shouldn't be eating at 10 o'clock in the evening, and you know, and we shouldn't be having our evening meal really late and then carrying on eating biscuits while we're watching TV. What we should be doing is having our evening meal at a nice time, which, you
know, let's say 6:30?
Yeah, maybe it's 5:30, maybe it's 6:30, but it shouldn't be too late. And then we shouldn't be eating again until breakfast the next morning. We've then had a nice fast, and that might be about 12 hours. In the research, that tends to show that that is really quite optimum, 12 hours. And so even if you say
finish your dinner at 7 and then again at 7.
Exactly.
You've got that 12-hour fast.
But yet we've now give this a title and it's making people stressed because people think...
But actually it's not that. We're just saying just don't eat biscuits in an evening when you're watching TV, which is kind of hard because there's something quite relaxing about that, isn't there? But yes, okay, so the intermittent fasting could be, or just delay your breakfast a bit, but that's not great for functioning in the morning, is it, if you don't eat before you go to school? And it's about teaching our children to eat healthily too.
I think so, yeah. And even if you know, for some people, they don't like food in the morning, and that's absolutely fine. They might have their breakfast a little bit later. But for many people, and me included, my belly is rumbling when I wake up in the morning and I want to have my breakfast before I leave the house to, you know, take the kids to school. So I think that, you know, it doesn't have to be complicated, even that intermittent fasting term.
Let's take the anxiety out of intermittent fasting and reframe it as just don't eat 24 hours a day.
Yes.
Have a nice break of 10 hours, 12 hours where you're not putting something, food into your mouth, and your body has to have that break. Yeah.
And the reason that break is so important, what happens inside our bodies is the cells which have become damaged are able to be, the body can get rid of them and it can regenerate.
Damaged by food or
no,
what?
No, just cellular damage that goes on from our everyday exposure to life. And our body wants to get rid of those, repair them or get rid of them. And what happens when we're in a fed state is it can't do that. So we need to have that break from eating.
So
but
for physical
just
health,
a normal amount of hours, it doesn't need to be.
So this 5:2 work, research work, what would you say about that? I know several people that still stuck with this because it was about 4 or 5 years ago, wasn't it? I don't, maybe a bit longer, who don't eat for 2 days a week or eat only 500 calories on 2 days a week. And I speak to people again who are stressed trying to make that work.
Yeah, I mean, for some people, they love that style of eating. It fits their lifestyle. But for some people, it can mean that it makes life more stressful and that it's confusing them and maybe making them develop some eating disordered
eating. Correct, perhaps overeating on the days, stuffing your face. Because if I thought, tomorrow I can't eat, then at 10 o'clock that night I'd be eating
extra.
Of course I would.
I agree. So I think, you know, for some people, if that's a lifestyle that you think is going to suit you, but you should still be eating healthy foods, you know, the whole time. And, you know, there can be some benefits, but...
Weight loss benefits. I mean, it's suggested there's more physiological benefits. Would you recognise those or would you challenge those a little bit?
No, they do talk about those physiological and weight loss benefits, but we get many benefits just from that 12-hour fast as well, and that is more normal.
And that's achievable.
And let's not be stressful about it.
And maybe if we just all closed the kitchen, we wouldn't have to think about having 2 days where we didn't eat, perhaps. Okay. Well, I mean, those just already, I think, we've set the record straight for a number of things that are in our social media stratosphere right now. And just to be clear, that's not to say that if you choose to follow any particular diet and that works for you, it makes you feel better or empowered, then that's perfect. We are talking to large groups of people who feel anxiety at something they feel they should be doing, but they can't. And as a result, like your lady, they just have toast all day.
Yeah.
Fine. So... okay, so we're going to talk in a minute about actual mental health and food, like what is good for the brain. But let's just go back to this what to cook for tea then. So we've thrown out some of these myths and we've said, right, so we just kind of keep it basic. So what does the average person eat then? I mean, you know, we're surrounded by meal deals and, you know, salads at Pret, and we take our food to the office. What, you know, I mean, we haven't, in a few sentences, what would you suggest people do?
Well, I think this is a stress that many people have. So a lot of people tell me that in the morning, they'll be opening the fridge or maybe not even in the morning, when they get home from a long day at work or, you know, a lot of computer time, they're then trying to think, what am I going to cook for tea? And it's stressful, mm-hmm. because there's no plan in place and they don't know what to make, and they open the fridge and they can't quite figure out what ingredients they've got in, and so then they either just give up and have toast or from the takeaway, and that's exactly
correct.
What we shouldn't be doing.
So
I always advise people to just make a loose plan for the week. It doesn't have to be set in stone, but maybe you decide that Monday you're going to have some fish, Tuesday you're going to have spag bol. You know, it doesn't have to be complicated. Wednesday's a really busy day, so let's have beans on toast. But have a bit of a plan in place so that you've removed that stress from either in the morning when you've got to rush around trying to get everybody ready for school and work and figure out what you need to get out the freezer, or, you know, or when you get home from a long day at work and you don't want to have to think about what am I cooking now, you've got a bit of a guide in place just to help you.
Okay, and that also helps with shopping, and as we've just talked on another podcast, you know, money is tight, so it helps us to not buy loads of, I mean, when I'm busy at work, the worst thing for me is I just rush the supermarket, pull a load of stuff in my trolley, and then it goes off later in the week. It's not effective, is it? So and something you talked about when you talked about the evening meals, there was a sort of I know we're not proteinaholics, but there was a slight focus on it be fish, chicken or beans. And is that just a way to kind of manage it, even if that vegetarian protein, it's a way to sort of think about
it? Yes, yeah, I think so, because I think what you'd think is, okay, I'm going to have my fish dish, but of course that's going to come with a whole variety of lovely vegetables, hopefully, because we want to benefit our health from them as well. When I think about meals, I'd never thought about it this way, actually, but when I think about meals, I'll think, yes, we'll have our fish that day, we'll have that day, we'll have a different type of fish that day.
Yeah, so if you're struggling, there's one thing you could do. You could think of a range of,
which is the protein source.
What can
I put with that to make it delicious?
Yes, and that will include carbohydrates, we hope, but whole grain carbohydrates and vegetables. Okay, and what about people saying, well, okay, I eat the same thing for breakfast and lunch every day, and we know it's not great to eat the same thing every day. So what do we do about those meals? We're busy, and how do we manage it?
I think it depends what you're having for breakfast, but for lots of people, they do decide to have the same thing every day, because it again, you've removed the stress then. They've managed to get that routine, it works for them, and if it's a healthy, balanced breakfast, then that's fine. So my preference would be you're having a lovely bowl of porridge made with some nice milk, so you've got a protein source, you've got your whole grain carbohydrates from the oats, and you can top that with a sprinkling of nuts and seeds and maybe a bit, you know, some fruit, so hopefully in there.
Sugar? Honey?
No, definitely not.
And so, well, okay. So if you have the same breakfast every day, that's not, as long as it's not two custard creams, you probably, or you know, if it's something reasonably healthy, that's okay. Gosh, I mean, I could segue here into how to wean your children off sugary cereals, but I won't go there because we could be there all day. Right, lunchtime.
Yep.
Should that be a little bit different?
Yeah, now, interestingly, lunch can be tricky for lots of people because they don't know what to make.
And you're out or you're in at home. I mean, we're all over the place, aren't we?
Yeah. So there is absolutely nothing wrong with making yourself a sandwich and taking it with you. In fact, just a couple of weeks ago, a client said to me that she's doing really well now and she is eating better and losing weight and having less cakes and biscuits because she has made a decision to make herself a sandwich every day for lunch. And she was avoiding sandwiches because she thought they were unhealthy. But then,
ironically, probably then eating a slice of Victoria sponge.
Exactly.
Yes.
Then what happened was she couldn't resist cakes and biscuits, or she just would get home from work and couldn't resist eating lots of things. things while she's cooking the tea.
Oh, yeah, so, we all know that one.
So, yep, she made the decision, let's make a sandwich every day and she can manage to eat better. So there's nothing wrong with that. You've got some nice bread, hopefully. So it's whole grain, maybe it's a seedy bread roll. Sourdough is a really good option because it's got less effect on our blood sugars. So it's you know, better to digest from that point of view. It's also one of our probiotics for when we talk a bit more about gut health. So you've made your sandwich. It's got some protein in there. It's got some salad in there. And that would be good for lunch. But of course, there's a whole load of other things you could make as well. You could make a salad in, you know, in a tub and take it with you. You, again, needs a carbohydrate source, needs a protein source and lots of veggies.
It's not just iceberg, yeah.
Yeah.
That's, you'd nice be hungry mixture. If you, yeah.
Yeah,
okay,
we so want a colourful mixture and it needs to have the carbohydrates because otherwise we will get hungry and we'll have biscuits and cake instead. Mm-hmm. And that's not what we want to do. We want to have the slow-releasing carbohydrates.
Or soup, salads, yeah. Sandwiches. Yep. And it's that, but it's that, I think for a lot of people who are struggling with their weight, perhaps, or feeling like they'll often not make a sandwich, like you say, because I think, well, that's fattening. Maybe I'll just do with that. Maybe I'll just have some fruit at lunch or something. Yeah. You know, because trying to, and then what will happen 3 hours later, like you say, or they get home from work and it's, I'll just open the bag of Doritos while I'm cooking my stir fry and, oh, who's eating them all? Oh, me, And it's just, it's that mindless eating because you haven't eaten enough normally.
Yes, yeah.
So I think a lot of people think, God, I can't resist this. I'm always binging on this. Well, no, it's probably you're not eating enough beforehand in the day.
Yeah.
Don't be scared to eat more in mealtimes, would you say?
Yeah. I think, you know, we shouldn't be trying to skip our meals. It's normal to be hungry. That is something that's good. So if breakfast was at 7:30, then at 12:30, you're going to be hungry. That's normal. And make sure you've got a nice balanced meal to enjoy.
And then you won't, when you get home from work, hopefully you'll be able to wait a moment. Okay, so we've talked about just some, okay, so the thing, you know, and what I love about when I work with you, Lisa, and what you always talk about is just keeping it simple and, but making sure it's consistent and not overcomplicating it. And that's what we've done with food. And that's why we're talking about people, making us anxious. And okay, before we move on to food that's good for the mind, food that's going to help our mental health, let's just talk about clean eating, because that's a term that I want to clean up, shall we say. What is, you know, clean foods? What does this mean?
It makes me cringe when I hear that term. It's people's perception that they're, you know, taking out all sorts of things out of their diet and they're only eating, you know, kale and goji berries and you
quinoa.
But it's not something that we should be striving for. You know, we should be having healthy, balanced meals. There's no such thing as clean eating. Food is food. It's
So a wholemeal cheese sandwich with some cucumber in it is a healthy meal.
Exactly. Yeah. What is not clean about that is, you know, it's a term that we shouldn't be aspiring to.
And I think it's creating, you know, I think if we think of the, you know, younger generation, perhaps creating some eating disorders, isn't it? Sort of orthorexia, the obsessiveness with healthy eating. And there's a lot of stigma around what you eat. But I mean, a Brussels sprout is a superfood, isn't it? You know what I mean? It's like, it doesn't have to be goji berries.
No. And why did goji berries become so
popular? We have
to
look at the marketing around this, don't we?
Yes.
And the money in the price of these things, matcha. That's the other thing.
Yeah, and it's the packaging and the sales pitch. Mm-hmm. And actually, you know, the loose fruit and veg that you get in the shops is what we should be having. And that doesn't have a marketing ploy with it because it's come from a farmer. And that is the food that's best for us.
Food from the ground and as healthy as possible. I mean, we know that. But we just find it difficult to do because we are just, marketing is so powerful with food, isn't it? Incredibly.
And it annoys me as well when you see things that are marketed as being great and actually they are full of sugar or full of fat or,
I mean, this is the low-fat thing that happened in the 90s, isn't it? They just pumped the foods full of sugar and that was no good for us.
No, exactly. Yeah, and breakfast cereal you mentioned. And, you know, it might be labelled as having 20 different added vitamins, but hang on a minute, do you realise that there's so much sugar in that?
Yeah.
And that's, I think things like that house. It's tricky when
cereal.
You've got children.
Yeah, and they love it.
and they, again, they've seen that marketing and they think that that's great for them and it appeals to them. Mm. So it is difficult.
It is. So we're simplifying food. We're not associating ourselves with needing excess protein or eating clean foods, and we're thinking about simple food with not skipping meals, and we're trying to fill ourselves up on the foods, and then not trying to have a natural fast, not intermittent fasting overnight. Now, lots of people listening, struggling with low mood, anxiety, stress, depression. I don't know a lot of the research around this, but I know there's research to suggest that certain foods can help alleviate this. So whilst we're not trying to move into the, unique and specific diets, what things could help and why, Lisa?
For the brain. So,
yeah.
Okay, if we think food and mood and food for
the brain.
Food and
mood, perfect,
yes.
Yeah.
So really, we're still talking about the same principles. So we want a general healthy diet. There isn't a one single food which is going to make your mood better and make your brain better. But as a combination, these are things we should be doing. So we want to make sure we've got enough fluid. So the brain
okay,
is...
Okay, so let's start there. Yep. We need more fluid. Yep. You know, my mum who drinks 2 cups of tea a day, and I say keep drinking a bit more. How much do we need?
So the recommendation is 6 to 8 glasses a day. And we're talking about 1.5, 2 litres of fluid. And your tea and coffee is fluid, but it does contain caffeine. So although it does add to our hydration...
Just drink some water. See to me.
Although it adds to our hydration, we do also need just normal plain water. The great thing about normal plain water is it contains minerals. And that is perfect for then being transported to where it needs to be in our body to hydrate our cells.
We forget that.
Yeah.
The plain water,
yep.
Boring, as my kids would say,
yep.
The plain water is so good for us. It contains minerals
yep.
that transport it to where it needs to go. Tap water,
yep.
is that okay?
Tap water, absolutely. It's free. It's, readily available. If you don't like it, straight out the tap. Put it in a bottle and put it in the fridge and chill it. But just plain water, we should be drinking some every day.
So up to 6 to 8 glasses of plain water, plus a couple of teas and coffees if you want.
Yep.
What about food drinks we're talking about fluid, so with calories, shall we say, juice and I mean, no, it doesn't matter if you enjoy it. What's your thoughts on that?
So if we're talking about fresh juice, mm-hmm. so it still has a high sugar content. They've squashed an awful lot of fruit to make that juice, and we'd be better eating the fruit than drinking it. So I would say instead of having a glass of orange juice, have an orange. But if you really enjoy a small glass of orange juice with your breakfast, then there's nothing wrong with that. But it should be about 150 ml. It is a small amount. And you don't need to have that several times a day. Once is more than adequate. Then if we start thinking about things like fizzy drinks,
mm-hmm.
and coffees with added syrups, then they're not going to do us any good because there's so many sugars in them. And sugar is the one thing that we don't need in our diet.
It's so sad.
the body makes glucose from the whole grain carbohydrates that we need with our meals. We don't need to have sugar. And what happens when we do have lots of sugar is our blood sugar goes up and down. And then that can affect our mood.
Mood, actually, we're still yeah. here. When our blood sugar, so sugar in drinks, mm-hmm. in these coffees that we love, probably in smoothies too, our blood sugar is going up and down and that's affecting our mood.
Yes, yeah. So they're the things that we might go to make us feel better. But actually, in what it's doing really is making things worse because your blood sugars go up, they crash back down again, and then you feel worse than you did in the first place. And you might also feel, oh gosh, I shouldn't have just had that creamy coffee and now I feel worse mentally as well, mm-hmm. because I'm upset with myself for doing that. So it's a vicious circle, really.
Okay.
They're things that we don't need to have.
So hydration's important for food and mood, and small amounts of juice are fine, but water, tea, coffee are preferable. Yeah. And it's difficult because the coffee shops, you know, are full of extreme coffees, as I call them.
But they also do decaf tea and decaf coffee, and you can just have it plain, and a variety of, you know, different.
You know,
teas.
I think, I mean, I'm segueing slightly here, but there's a psychology around treating ourselves, mm-hmm. having something special, which is actually every day. And there's a psychology around making us feel better by doing that, isn't there? Mm-hmm. And that's what we're doing, like we have talked about with exercise. We see exercise as negative, so we think, well, I'm not going to do that because I'll feel worse. And we see food as treats. Well, mm-hmm. I'm going to have that yummy frappa chocca coffee thingy because it's going to make me feel better. But then it doesn't. Yeah. So, yeah, I think there's something to be said for that. So, okay, so fluid. What else?
We also know that if we're a little bit dehydrated, then the brain don't function as well as it should, and we get brain fog, and we get other, you know, side effects. So we do need to make sure we're getting enough fluid.
I mean, I know so many people who hardly drink. It's who are probably fogged over several times a day.
And we know that in studies they gave people a glass of water and then tested their reaction times, and they were much better than the group they didn't give a glass of water immediately before they tested the reaction times.
Really?
So
drink a glass of water, everybody, because I think, as you know, that's it's the simple things again. Yep. Just drink a glass of water. Yep. Okay, so what else, food and mood?
So we also need to think about some oily fish. So
Why? What does that do?
Has got omega-3 in it, and it is an essential fat. We cannot make it in the body. The body's very clever, and sometimes when we don't eat certain foods, it can make things within the body. But omega-3 is one of those things that is essential from the diet. So we get it in oily fish, so things like salmon, sardines, mackerel, pilchards. Again, it doesn't need to be expensive. You can get tinned sardines, 50p.
There you go.
And you need to have that. And
if you don't like it.
Yeah, if you're vegetarian or don't like to eat fish, then you can get it from flax seeds and linseeds. There's a small amount in walnuts, algae and seaweed. So they're other options.
For omega-3, but I don't think so many people eat that. So you'd take a supplement then?
Well, if you sprinkle flax seeds on your breakfast every morning, mm-hmm. if you don't eat fish, you would need to have these other options on a regular basis to get enough omega-3. If you eat a portion, so a 140-gram portion of salmon, which would be a normal size portion, you get enough omega-3 for the week. So
what, in one?
In one
serving.
Oh,
okay. So that's really...
So it's not difficult.
So you don't have to have it every night, you just have to have
once a week.
Maybe fish once a week.
Yeah.
Okay, and what does omega-3 do for our head, our mood?
It's present in the brain, and if we don't have enough of that in our diet, then studies have shown that our mood can dip, and we could become more upset and depressed and anxious. So we want to make sure that we have that.
I'm topping it up. So, you know, these are the simple things. We're not saying that, you know, there's no need for pharmaceutical treatment or therapy, but we're saying there's extra stuff we can do.
Yes.
Fluid.
Yep.
Omega-3, once a week salmon or flax seeds on your breakfast. Okay.
Yep.
What else?
So as well as our omega-3, we might also want to think about olive oil. So we know that olive oil has got health benefits, and, you know, you'll have all heard people talk about the Mediterranean diet.
Yep.
And one of the things in there is that you use olive oil on your salad dressings or to cook with, and that has properties for our brain and our heart. So I never tell people to use much oil because we don't want to have too much of it. But if we are using oil, then we should be using extra virgin olive oil.
And what does it do for our brain then?
So it's not easy to answer that question because we can't cut our brain while we're alive and see exactly what's happening.
But
what we do know is people who follow a healthy, balanced diet, so they are having olive oil, they're hydrated, they're not drinking too much alcohol, they're having oily fish, they're having plenty of leafy greens and vegetables and fruit and whole grain carbs. So those six things they're doing on a regular basis. So you don't have to be perfect every day.
And
but
we see
on
that
a regular
that is...
basis. They then can take brain scans. And what these brain scans show is if you're following that style of pattern, your brain is larger than somebody who is following a processed diet. And you can see shrinkage. Wow. So on a processed diet, the brain scan shows shrinkage.
That is
shown in some studies where they looked at 35-year-old women, so younger than we are, and they've seen brain shrinkage from eating a processed food diet in comparison to a balanced, healthy lifestyle.
I mean, if nothing else alone, that horrific fact should lead us to move away from processed food. But, you know, as an aside, I know the reasons that many of us eat processed food are far more complicated than knowledge. Knowledge doesn't lead to change. I know we do it for time and for other reasons too, but that's a good thing for us to think about,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're avoiding the processed food. We're trying to eat these other foods. So we don't want our brains to shrink. We don't want our mood to dip. Anything else around for food and mood? Or
well, they've done studies as well. So that there was a clinical study called the SMILE study some years back now. And what they did there was they had two different groups, and they put one group on what they called the MIND diet. So it was a combination of the Mediterranean diet and another one called the DASH diet, which is one that's been designed to help people lower their blood pressure. But the general theme of this diet is just this balanced, healthy eating. But we've got some oily fish, we've got some lean protein, there is some red meat in the MIND diet, so there's nothing wrong with that either, but just not too much of it, and not processed food. Olive oil rather than any processed oils, and plenty of vegetables, especially leafy greens and berries. And no more than a glass of wine, if you're having any alcohol. No more
a
than
day?
A glass of wine
Don't
a day.
A week.
A day, yeah. never more than that.
Uh-huh.
And they put people onto that type of balanced, healthy eating, and they had another group who were getting some social support. And these people in this study were severely or moderately depressed, and what they saw was a significant improvement on the group who followed this healthy, balanced diet. Even though the other group were getting social support, the diet had the significant improvement.
So, you know, as you've just clearly stated, the research shows us that a balanced diet without processed food mm-hmm. and moderate alcohol can have a transformative effect for some
yep.
on mood, depression, and therefore, you know, like we talked about movement on another podcast, you know, it's worth a try. Like we've talked about engaging with art for your mental health. If nothing else, it's worth a try.
Yep.
I know how difficult it is to change food habits, so I do know that. Okay, so we've heard some really interesting things around the impact of food on our mood, on our brains, on our mood states. What I see a lot of people talk about right now is our gut
mm-hmm.
and the research around gut health and its impact on mental health and obesity and all sorts of things. So before we finish, Lisa, what it seems like this is the new area for food right now. What is this all about?
Yeah, gut health is really interesting at the moment because there's been lots of research coming out. So the gut is the second brain.
The gut is the second brain. Wow.
It's a really important part of our immune system. You know when people sometimes say, oh, I had a gut feeling about that?
I have, yeah.
You know, there's a reason. It is part of, you know, it's a sense in our body. We should be paying attention to it, but we also should be looking after it. So if we think about things that are going to look after our gut health, we need to think about prebiotics and probiotics.
So I've seen those, yeah.
So prebiotics are fruits, vegetables, whole grain carbohydrates, nuts, seeds, lentils. So they are herbs, spices. All of those things are prebiotics.
Herbs and spices?
Yes. Yeah.
Wow, okay.
And the advice is that we should be trying to get about 30 different prebiotics over the week. And that might sound like an awful lot. We've suddenly gone from 5 a day to 30 prebiotic foods.
Different, though. What you're saying is 30 different kinds.
Over the week. So it's no good if you only eat carrots and peas and you have carrots and peas every day.
Okay.
Because you're not then getting 30 different prebiotic foods over the week. But it does sound like a lot, but it's easy to do because there's so many things included in that. So it's not just fruit and vegetables. It's the whole grain carbohydrates. So it could be that you have porridge and you have a sprinkling of nuts and seeds on that. But in your sprinkling of nuts and seeds, you might have 10 different varieties of nuts and seeds. And so you've got oats and you've got 10 different nuts and seeds. You've added a handful of blueberries, blackberries, strawberries, whatever your favourite berries are that day. And so 12 straight away on that breakfast. And that would be something that I really recommend people try and do as a starting point. Why not start the day off really well? Then you might go on to have lunch and you've got some different leafy greens and vegetable choices in there. You've got a different whole grain carbohydrate with your lunch to what you have with your evening meal. Potatoes maybe with
different
your evening meal.
Herbs and maybe you said.
Yeah, maybe you've used one of those packets of ready grains with lunch, which are nice and easy to access for everybody. So just over the week we want to get a variety.
Okay, so don't just eat the same. So the gut is super important. It's our second brain. There's so much research to show its impact on all sorts of elements of our health. First thing, prebiotics and probiotics. Prebiotics means eating lots of different prebiotics, you know, kind of aiming for 30 a week. Nuts, mm-hmm. seeds, herbs, vegetables, leafy greens, and whole grains.
Yeah.
Okay. What about the probiotics?
So then probiotics are things that have got live bacteria in them. So yogurt is a natural probiotic. They're not allowed to put that on the label because the word probiotic is seen as being a health implication. So
hang on, yogurt, the yogurt manufacturer.
Yep.
They can't put
they
the word
probiotic.
They are allowed
to put gut friendly and things like that on there nowadays,
right.
But they can't use the word probiotic. But it is. So you could go to the supermarket and buy the own brand natural yogurt and it has live cultures in there. That's how they make yogurt.
Okay, so that's my probiotic.
So, yes, so there we go. We can tick that off. And that might make a nice way to finish your lunch or something that you add to your breakfast.
What if you don't like yogurt? What's another probiotic?
Another option is kefir, or it's sometimes pronounced kefir.
Yeah.
And that is a type of fermented milk. And it sounds awful, but you can get that in a drink or you can get that in a yogurt form. Now, the reason kefir has become so popular is it's got even more of those live bacteria in there. So it's cultured to have more bacteria. So that's an option. Then cheese.
They add
bacteria to cheese to make it.
Cheese and crackers isn't the worst.
No, we don't want to have too much cheese because there's a lot of calories in a small space, but it is a source of protein. It provides calcium and it's a probiotic. So we've ticked a few boxes there. Then we can go on to other fermented foods. So sauerkraut, the cabbage,
I just winced for anyone that's not watching the video.
It might be that added to your salad makes your salad taste amazing. Uh-huh. It might be that you've got some pickled red cabbage and that adds to your salad.
So is it the pickling that's the probiotic?
It's the fermentation. That's mm-hmm. what adds the probiotic. Kimchi has become quite popular and you can buy that in supermarkets now.
So what kimchi is it? What do you do with it?
It's a bit like sauerkraut, but there's other vegetables in there, so it's tastier. And there's chilies and spices and garlic and flavourings, you know, like herbs, spices.
Okay, what is it? Just in a little pot?
It's in a little pot and you can add a spoonful of that to your lunchtime salad and you can transform that dish into something that tastes really amazing. I love kimchi. And then another option would be kombucha. So kombucha is a fermented tea, and you can buy that in the supermarkets. So you can buy that. So it's got probiotics in it.
And I mean, okay, we started off talking about the overhyped up, overmarketed foods, but I feel like we're now talking about some specific foods that someone listening could say, is that not just hyped up? But it isn't. And why is it not? Because we need this probiotic.
Yeah. The research is showing how important our guts are for our health because it's part of our immune system as well.
Let's talk about why the gut is so important for the health.
So what we've seen in studies, so they've done studies where they've looked at twins and the twins who the brother or sister who has the good gut bacteria, when they look at the bacteria in their gut from looking at their feces, they can see who has a good different variety of gut bacteria, and they have less health problems than those people who have very few bacteria in their gut.
So we want more bacteria in our gut, and the more we have, the less health problems. Now, what health problems are we talking about? Because I've read some alarming statistics.
Yeah, there's all sorts of health problems. So it's overweight and obesity.
Yeah. Through poor gut bacteria.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Then we've got diabetes, we've got heart disease,
cancers. Yeah.
So, you know...
Immune system. I mean, the biggest one is your immunity.
Yes.
So if anyone's worried, I mean, we all seem to be ill these days, don't we? You know, post-pandemic, but boosting your immune system can be done through boosting your gut health.
Yes, you're supporting your immune system to work how it should work. And if we're feeding the bacteria with the prebiotic and then we're giving it a nice dose of probiotics with maybe some nice yogurt, it could be some delicious creamy Greek yogurt, then we're supporting the gut to do what it should be doing. Now, the really important thing is that we need to do that on a daily basis because the bacteria they come out in our waste product.
We're saying don't stress about food. We're underlining that. Don't have anxiety about food. But something we need to pay attention to is our gut health.
Yep.
Because the research right now is just incredible around the impact that it has on so many things. And prebiotics, all your vegetables and your nuts and seeds and your whole grain carbohydrates, and probiotics, we mentioned cheese, that's an easy one, we mentioned yogurt, that's another easy one, but kombucha and kefir and kimchi, what is it with the K's? But anyway, right, they are good sources too, so we could see those.
It doesn't have to be complicated, does it? I mean, this is the science behind it, but really we just need to get a variety of foods and we have a yogurt each day and you're better off. And we shouldn't be eating processed foods.
So let's just list for the listener, before we sort of close the conversation today, what are processed foods? I know we should know, but maybe we've just lost the plot with it. What are processed foods?
So a processed food could be lots of things, actually. So it could just be some frozen peas are a processed food, but they are good for us. So absolutely include those in your diet. But when we talk about processed foods, we're talking about ultra processed foods. And we're talking about things that you couldn't make in your own kitchen at home. It wouldn't work. They make them in the food manufacturing plants and then they coat them in breadcrumbs and they sell them to us. So it could be, I want to say chicken nuggets, but, some of those...
They've had a bad rap, haven't they?
Okay. Yeah.
Frozen pizza?
Frozen pizza is a processed food, yep. I mean, you could make pizza at home. If you're going to make it at home, then you're probably going to use better ingredients. It depends okay. where you buy it.
What about ham and turkey? Yeah. Processed?
So if you're cooking a joint and then you're slicing it, or you're cooking a chicken and you're slicing it, then it's processed because it's cooked, but it's not a processed food. The ultra processed foods, let's think McDonald's, KFC, burgers.
Okay, and also though, breakfast cereals?
Yeah, you couldn't make those in the kitchen at home from the grain.
Digestives? Biscuits?
Yeah.
All snack foods, really, then?
Well,
what about, it's 4 p.m, I want this kind of healthy granola bar. Is that...
Yeah,
Lisa's looking no, it's not okay. she didn't respond in the way I wanted.
Yep. So a granola bar, you wouldn't particularly make that easily in your kitchen at home, would you? So the rule of thumb, I would say, is if you can make it in your kitchen at home, then it's absolutely fine. But if really your 4 p.m. snack could be a handful of nuts and raisins, and that would be absolutely fine. That is not a ultra processed food, but ultra processed food we're talking
fast
about
food,
things
takeaways
that, yeah.
Biscuits, most snack foods,
things that your grandma would not recognize.
Where do chips sit? Frozen chips?
So frozen chips are processed, and some of them would be, they've taken a potato, they've chopped it up, they pre-fry it before they freeze it. So we've got extra cheap processed oils, and they are very bad for us because they're not stable. We want to be using a nice extra virgin olive oil, which is very good for our health. We don't want to be using an ultra processed oil. And some frozen chips, they're potatoes that have been blended and then pureed and then piped back out again and coated
blended
in something.
Blended potatoes?
Yep.
Coated
in something and then pre-fried. So it depends which chips you're buying. But if you were to make chips at home and you were to get a potato and chop it up and spray it with some oil and bake it in the oven, absolutely fine. But that is very different to a McDonald's fry, which is pureed, piped, pre-fried. So the more processed, the worse it.
Saying that processed food is bad for our physical and mental health, and we probably all knew that. We're trying to establish what processed food is and really what it comes back to, which is difficult for so many of us, I know, because of time, but it's coming back to cooking. But then I guess it just comes back to a bit of planning and a bit of, like your mom said, batch cooking and all this kind of thing. And it's a little system that we need to put in place, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's a bit boring maybe, especially if you're like me and you don't love cooking, but you just have to see it as something as part of your self-care.
Yeah,
it's a tool for your mental health, isn't it?
I heard someone say recently that we save for our, when we get older, we save and put a pension, but we should also, feed ourselves ready for retirement. We should save for retirement and we should feed ourselves
for
ready
our
for
health.
Retirement.
Yeah, so
for
we're
health.
Not in
we don't
ill
want
health.
To be in ill health when we're older. So the other really bad thing about processed foods is they're hyper palatable. So it's really difficult not to overeat
them.
To
taste it.
They've been designed
what I mean.
That way.
They literally find the ratio of sugar, salt and fat, don't they?
Definitely.
I mean, there's lots of studies there, and they put this magic formula together and you're just like,
Yeah. And the more you have of it, the more you want it. And so the best thing is, the more that you can cook at home, the better. And as you said, it might be a bit boring, but actually it's really important for our health, and we want to be healthy. We want to live and be healthy as we age. And actually we should put some time and focus and thought into that.
Okay, so I think, we've started off by saying, look, don't overcomplicate food, don't stress about it, and we talked about why and what a simple balanced diet looks like. And I suppose we've come around to saying, well, don't stress about it, but do pay attention to it. Don't just say, I won't stress about it, so I'll just have another takeaway. It's like, no. It really does have an impact on your mental health.
Yes.
So appreciate what you need to do and then put a little plan in place. And then I suppose the last thing, because somebody might be thinking, well, it sounds expensive. And you know what? I mean, there's a lot to be said. I mean, cheap processed food can be cheap.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, so what do we do? Because we're on a budget.
Yes. Okay. So when they did the SMILE study, they did do a cost analysis. So they were putting people on this very balanced, healthy way of eating. And the cost analysis showed that it wasn't more expensive. It was actually cheaper. And now I appreciate that when we go to the supermarket, we can buy an awful lot of processed food very cheaply. So how can that be? But I would assume that it was cheaper because people were not buying takeaways and not buying the food outside the home as much. So they were saving in their weekly food budget generally. So if you think, you know, if you were going to pop to the coffee shop at lunchtime and buy your lunch, it costs an awful lot more than it would to make buy it.
I suppose it's getting set up in the first place, isn't it? Because I'll think, oh, I'm going to cook properly tonight and I'll go and buy all the ingredients. I'm like, blimey. Like that's cost a lot of money. Yeah. And now I've got millions of herbs I'll never use again. But I suppose the answer you would say is, well, cook a massive amount of it and cook that meal again.
You use your slow cooker. I love the slow cooker. You can just chuck everything in, leave it for the day, and your meal's ready when you get home. And it, you know, you don't have to be expensive. You can put your lentils and beans in there and bulk it out.
Okay, so if you can afford it or have one, maybe a slow cooker. And then I have to ask, what about an air fryer? That's all we hear about. Okay. Are they a thing, or do
they're
we need
really
them?
They're really popular now.
Yeah.
You don't need one. It only does what your oven does. But the benefit of it is that it's quicker and you don't have to preheat it. So whereas the oven, you might have to turn it on for, you know, 10
minutes
to warm
up. And we're short on time, aren't we?
Yeah, okay. And then that takes time. Whereas with the air fryer, it, you know, it's on, it's hot straight away. So
okay, so it saves time, but it's not a magic bullet.
No.
Okay, well, what I feel like we have covered so much for everybody listening today. And let's just recap a little bit. We're talking about food, even though we're working with mental health, because it has an impact in so many different ways. A lot of us are stressing about it, and Lisa's explained why we don't need to. B, some things we're eating are actually making our low mood worse, and we've talked about that. And then C, the importance of gut health, how why we need to eat pre and probiotics, and the transformative effect that can have on all sorts of elements of our health. And it comes back to a little bit of work, because it does come back to a bit of planning and a bit of cooking. But once we get in a habit, as we know from our other behaviour habit podcasts, we'll get there.
Yeah. And people might find that they really actually do enjoy that time they spend in the kitchen. So, you know, it doesn't have to be a chore.
It could be good for your mental health.
It can be, yeah. Yeah. People can feel proud of what they've achieved.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us today, Lisa. It's really informative.
Thank you. It's been really nice.
Thank you.